All right, today we're continuing in our study on the book of Colossians. We are finishing chapter 3 and just leaning into chapter 4 a little bit today. And we're not talking about integrity on the job, in the marketplace, wherever you go in your, you know, daily place of business and transactions and buying and selling and all of those things. In the early 2000s, I had a friend who was working actually in this area for a company that made very large, high-tech material for, it was called offset printer blankets. I don't really know what that is. But these very large sheets that were very white, and what happened was the storehouse caught on fire, and soot was everywhere, and the insurance people came out, and the company said that these rolls of this, you know, great white paper blanket, they had been ruined by the soot. But the thing was, the paper had backing, and the backing could be removed. And it was really only the backing that got ruined by the soot. And so the company told the insurance company that all of this was ruined, and so there was going to be a claim. My friend was responsible to fill out the paperwork for the insurance company. And there came a line on the insurance documents that he was supposed to sign off on that said this material had been ruined and would need to be replaced. But the company had already decided that they were just going to replace the backing and sell it. So the insurance company would pay for it as a total loss, but it was not a loss. And my friend wouldn't sign the document. Well, his bosses, and he himself was an upper level manager, but he had bosses still. And the bosses were very upset with him. And they couldn't fire him for being honest. But what they did is they fired him a few months later on some sort of, you know, dubious claims. And so he lost his job. It was a very important job. He was in his 60s. It was hard for him to get a different job. And he lost his job basically for exercising integrity. That's really hard. But today we're looking in the book of Colossians, and we're going to find that integrity is just everything to our Savior. And so, you know, whatever it takes, we have to be people of integrity in the marketplace. Here's what it sounds like in Colossians 3:22. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. That is, as far as physical things go, we know that the Lord is your ultimate master spiritually, but you know, the people who are your bosses in this world. And don't obey them with eye service. That is, you know, when they're watching me, I'm a really good worker. Not that way. As men pleasers, and we'll break that down a little bit too, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily. That is, you know, from the soul. We're not just doing it, you know, halfway. We're doing it as well as we can. As to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong shall receive for the wrong which he has done, and there is no respect of persons. And then leaning over into chapter 4, masters, give to your servants that which is right and equal, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. All right, so you can see that the verbiage here with servants and masters, that's a little uncomfortable for all of us. But remember that in the Roman Empire, in the early church, many, many of the Christians were servants. There were more servants in the Roman Empire than there were free citizens. And so very likely when the Apostle Paul says, you see, you're calling brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but the Lord has chosen the weak things of the world to confuse the wise. All right, well, a lot of the early Christians were in the servant class. They weren't important. Some of them were important, but a lot of them were in the servant class. So he says, now, when you're doing your job, you have to do it honestly. You have to obey your boss. You have to do a really good day's work for a really good day's wage. You just have to do that. And so that's what this is all about today. So we want to show you two things in this text that I think are enormously important. As people of integrity, how we're going to live our lives in the marketplace, buying and selling and working and being, in some cases, managers over workers. All right, so first of all, what all true followers of Jesus must do on the job. What do we do? What is it like to be us as followers of Jesus? What do we have to do? And then the second thing is, why do we do it that way? Why all true followers of Jesus are so committed to marketplace integrity, like my friend who lost his job because he wouldn't lie on the insurance documents. All right, so we start with this. What all of Jesus' true followers do. So if you're going to be a follower of Jesus authentically, you have to do this. This is what we all do. So again, in verse 22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, your bosses, not with eye service as men pleasers. You see that in the green font, right? All right, so in the first place, we're going to do highly valuable work even when no one is watching. So it doesn't matter if somebody's watching us or not. We're going to do really valuable work. We're going to work for the man, and we're going to do a good job. We're going to work for the customer, and we're going to do a really good job for the customer. It's just what we do. And you see this in other places in Scripture. This marketplace integrity is just assumed for all the followers of Jesus. So in Matthew 24, we have the parable. Jesus is talking about a good servant and a poor servant. And these servants are pretty special. They are what we sometimes call stewards. And that would be like what you call an administrative assistant or a personal assistant. So here it is. Therefore, you also be ready, for in such an hour as you do not think it is so, the Son of Man comes. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my Lord delays his coming. Look, nobody's around. My Lord isn't coming around here. If he says in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall begin to strike his fellow servants, he becomes a bully. He's the household manager, and he's being physical with people. And he shall begin to strike his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken. He's just partying. He's not doing a good job. Verse 50, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he's not looking for him, and in an hour when he is not aware of it, and he shall cut him apart and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. So he says, nobody's watching. I'm going to do whatever I jolly well please. And the Lord says, you can't do that. You can't do that in life. That's what this parable is really all about. But part of life is the marketplace, buying and selling and working for others and being the manager over others. In Proverbs 25, verse 19, same thing, doing highly valuable work even when no one is watching. In Proverbs 25, 19, confidence in an unfaithful man in a time of trouble is like a broken tooth. Basically, a broken tooth is a dental emergency. It hurts like crazy. And this text says, you put confidence in an unfaithful person. You thought you could trust this guy, and you can't trust him. And when you do that, when you put your trust in somebody who lets you down, it hurts as much as a dental emergency. And so as Christians, we just can't let people down. They're counting on us to do a good job, and they should know that we will not hurt them. It was one of the nicest things when I was 15 years old and in my state, Illinois, as a kid, I wasn't allowed to get a real job until I was 16. Well, we saw advertised in the paper that this guy wanted somebody to mow his yard, and he happened to be the manager of a Dog and Suds restaurant. Dog and Suds is a root beer stand, so, you know, hot dog and root beer. And it was a drive-in with, you know, hops that would go out there and put trays on your roll-down window, you know, that. So I'm sure they still have things like that, right? So anyway, this guy that wanted his lawn done owned a Dog and Suds restaurant. And I'm 15 years old. And so I talked to him about mowing his lawn. And he said, sure, you can do that. And he said, but on the other hand, I wonder if you'd like to work in the restaurant, too. And I'm too young, right? So he kind of has to get special permission. And I said, okay, I would love to do that. You know, that'd be so much better than mowing the yards. And so I mowed too, but then I did this Dog and Suds job. And I wanted to do a good job for Mac, this Mac's restaurant. I wanted to. I did, really. And I really appreciate that he took a chance on me, you know. And so, but I made mistakes. Like one time he said, when you make ice cream cones, you know, you pull the lever down, you swirl it like that, and the lever springs back, and you've done it. He said, but when the lever springs back, there's something wrong. You actually have to push it and secure it in place, because when you're not looking, the ice cream starts to push on the lever, and it starts to come out again. Say, okay, I got it. And so I made an ice cream cone, real pretty, you know, it's hard to swirl it, make it pretty with that little dollop on the top. And I made it, and I gave it to the cashier, and she gave it to the customer. And I looked back, and ice cream was billowing out of this meeting. He's like, oh no, no. He just told me not to do that. I did it. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm 15. I don't know anything. And they had this rule. You had to eat your mistakes. Which is really great. You know, like this guy wanted a Texas burger, with no chili. And I put chili on it. Like, okay, now you have to eat that. And I love it. But I'm all guilty, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. So anyway, and then he told me about the French fry machine. When you empty the oil, you have to change the oil. But you can also filter the oil in the French fry machine and then put it back through one more time. So he said, when you drain it, you know, it's very, very hot. So be careful. And so we catch it in a 5-gallon bucket, and that's good. And then you clean it all out pretty, and you pour it back in. I didn't close the drain valve. So I am dumping French fry oil, 5 gallons, all over the floor. Now, not all 5 gallons came out. But he just told me not to do that. You know, I'm 1,000 fools. I don't know how that happened. But I did earnestly want to do a good job. And I think he knew I wanted to do a good job. And it came time for me to get a different job. It was much closer to my house and it paid more. And my boss cried when I left. That meant so much to me, because even though in some ways I was a perfect fool, he knew that I wanted to do a good job, right? And it's because that whole Bible thing, you have to give this guy an honest day's work for an honest day's wage. It's the way of Jesus. And if you put your trust in an unfaithful man and he lets you down, it's like having a broken tooth. And you just can't do that to people. And so you see, all of Jesus' authentic followers take all of this very seriously. A long time ago, when there were actually servants and slave markets, and of course we don't approve of any of that, but I'm telling you this because there was this slave who is an example to all of us. I love this story, and even though it's a little politically incorrect, I love this man. This slave is my hero. And so this fellow who's going to buy the slave was known to treat his slaves really, really well. And so, you know, you want to get a job on this guy's estate because he treats his slaves really well. So he walked up to this slave named Tom. He said, Tom, will you be honest if you come to work for me? And Tom said, sir, I'll be honest no matter who I work for. I just love that. I'll be honest no matter who I work for. And that should be you. Say, well, I've had it with this boss. I'm not going to please him anymore. Don't say that. You have to give a good day's work for that boss, even if you don't prefer his company. It's what Christians do. And they should be able to say, I can trust that guy. He will not let me down. And that's our duty. So in the green font again, you see our verse says, we're going to be obedient. We're going to follow instructions, not with eye service as men pleasers. And in the yellow font, you see where it says, not merely pretending to do highly valuable work, not just pretending. We're going to actually do work that has value, and not just when somebody's looking and not pretending. So again, in Matthew 25, verse 24, another parable. So Jesus is talking about integrity and hard work. He says, then the person who had received one talent of silver would be something like 60 to 100 pounds of silver. That's quite a lot of silver. And if it was gold, then forget about it. At any rate, so this steward, administrative assistant, is given this 60 to 100 pounds of precious metal. And he brought it back at the end of the investment period when the Lord, the master, returned from where he's going. And he said, Lord, I knew that you're a stern man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the earth. See, you have what is yours. And his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant. You ought therefore to have put my money to the exchangers. And then at my coming, I would have received my own with interest. Take therefore the talent from him, for even that which he has shall be taken away. So this fellow, he's pretending to do good work. Whatever made his master think that he could be trusted, he couldn't really be trusted. And instead of actually working, what he did is he took the money, he put it in the ground and hid it, and he didn't do any work. Then when the master came around, he said, well, it was because I was afraid I'd make a mistake. And I'm sure he was afraid. I mean, nobody likes to invest. It's always scary and we can make a mistake. I'm sure he was afraid. But the Lord saw through that and he said, well, maybe you were afraid. But the biggest problem is you're wicked and lazy. You didn't even try. And this fellow had worked himself into a position of responsibility, or he never would have been given 60 to 100 pounds of silver or gold to invest. But the real problem is he was lazy. He didn't even try. He didn't even try. He was pretending to be an administrative assistant, but he wasn't really trying. In Greenfont, you see emphasized not as men pleasers, and that also is really important. Because sometimes scammers please people. Like I heard once about these two fellows who are weightlifters, and they had a job doing brick masonry, particularly for chimneys. And so they'd go up on the person's house, his roof, and check out the integrity of the chimney. But they're weightlifters. And so the scam was, you grab this chimney, you wiggle it back and forth until you have some bricks loose. Then you go down and you tell the homeowner you have some bricks loose. Well, it wasn't loose before you did that. So you say, but you're going to be okay. There's not going to be a fire because we're here and we'll fix it for you. So you pay the guy to fix it and the customer is happy. You know what you are then? You're a men pleaser. Because you made your customer happy, but the customer didn't know that you were being dishonest. So yeah, everybody just thinks you're wonderful, except God, He knows what you did. So we're going to obey, not with eye service when somebody is watching, just when he's watching, and not just as men pleasers, because scammers always make their customers happy. How do you know when you bring your car to the repair shop that it is in need of control arm bushings? Do you know how to diagnose that? I know how to diagnose it to some degree, and they scammed me. How are we supposed to know? We're trying to trust people here, right? How are you supposed to know if you have moisture damage in your crawl space? Are you going to get under there? And even if you did get under there, do you know what to look for? You're totally at their mercy. And so the scammers sometimes will make you happy. I'm a happy customer because he found moisture damage and he fixed it for me. I'm totally happy. But he was dishonest. And that means he's a men pleaser. But God knows what he did. Furthermore, you might have an immediate boss who encourages you to be dishonest to your other superiors or to your customers. Like my friend with the smoke damage on these offset printer blankets. His boss would have been happy if he had lied on the insurance documents. You know what he would have been then? A man pleaser. But he wouldn't have been a God pleaser. So you see the difference. I had a friend who was a professional mechanic, and he was going to a dealership around here inquiring about a job. And that dealership is closed now, so I think I'm safe to tell this story. And the owner of, or at least the manager of the service department, sat him down for the job interview, and he says, here's what we do here. Our particular brand of car has a part that fails all the time. Many of the customers who come in here with a problem in their car will have this particular problem. And what we do is we can just clean that component up and it is fully functioning again. So here's what we do here at the shop. They bring in the part, they bring in the car, and we tell them that this part has failed, and we recommend that they either buy a new one or a refurbished one. If they buy a new one, then we go to the parts bin and we get out a new one, and it's a good sale for everybody. If they say, I'd rather get the used one because it's only half as much money, then we go to the back of our shop and we grab a used one and we install that one, and that's free to us because the last guy said that he wanted a new one, and so we took his old one, we cleaned it, put it on our shelf, and now we come out ahead. So this happens over and over again, and what you'll do is you'll offer the customer a new one or a used one. If he says it's a used one, then we take one that's been cleaned up and we put it on his car, and you get to have 50% of the profits from that repair. And it only took a few minutes. And that's what we're going to do. And my friend, the professional mechanic, said, I think I'd like not to work here. And he got out of there. Well, the customer's still happy because he got his car released from the shop and it's working just fine. So he's fine. And you know what the mechanic is then? He's a man pleaser, but he's not a God pleaser. And then we see in yellow font at the top, where we're talking about the text of Scripture, it says we're not going to just do things with eye service when they're watching us, and not even as men pleasers. We want God, who knows the whole story, to be happy with us. But we're also going to do it in singleness of heart, fearing God. And then in yellow, again, we're going to do it heartily. Heartily means from the soul. Like we really want to do a good job for these people. We want to do a good job for our bosses, and we want to do a good job for our customers. When I was very young and I didn't have a lot of money, Teresa and I had a Datsun 280Z sports car, and it was very pretty. It was a beautiful car. But we needed to sell it, and we were going to sell it for $4,000. And I knew that something was happening with the hydraulic clutch, but it wasn't that big of a deal, and it didn't usually go badly. And so we sold the car. The guy came back to us a couple nights later, and he said, I had to put a new clutch master cylinder and slave cylinder on this thing, and it cost me, you know, whatever it was, $400. And you should have told me. And I think I gave him some of his money back to help pay for the cost of that repair. But I always hated that. And ever since then, this is a true story, I'm the worst horse trader in the world. Teresa doesn't ever want me to sell anything because I'm just afraid it's going to break and they're going to hate me. And part of that is I just can't bear to think that, you know, we sold somebody a lemon or something. I just don't. We sold our old Toyota Tacoma to Lydia Rogers, who's just like one of our church kids, you know. And that truck had 270,000 miles on it. And you know, that's just a lot of miles. And Tacomas are great, but wow, that's a lot of miles. And so then here comes fresh face Lydia. And I said, Lydia, I know you don't understand this, but this truck is honestly worth $8,000 or even more than that. And, you know, I don't particularly even want to sell to you. I'll sell it to a stranger, but it's just worth $8,000. And even though it has that many miles. So I said, but I think it's good. Like, I think I would feel comfortable taking it to California and back. I think it's good. And she bought that truck, and what do you think she did? She went straight to California with it. And not just straight to California. On the way home, she's zigzagging up and down. Let's go see Canada. Let's go see this. It's like, oh, no. And I guess it did okay. Scare me to death. Why? Well, because we just, from our souls, we want to make everybody happy. We would rather absorb the loss ourselves than make somebody else lose. And so we are truly making every effort. We're doing it from the soul, heartily. And that's what we intend to do. Again, Matthew 21, verse 28. But what do you think? A certain man had two sons, another parable of Jesus. A certain man had two sons. He came to the first and said, son, go work today in my vineyard. He answered and said, I do not wish to. But afterward, he repented and he went. And he came to the second and said likewise. And he answered and said, I will, sir. And he did not go. Now, which of these two did the will of his father? The one guy said, sure, I'll do it, Dad. I'll go to the vineyard today. But he never did. His heart wasn't in it. He said he was going to do it, but his heart wasn't in it. The other guy had a change of heart, and he went to the vineyard and did it after all. What we want to do is serve the Lord from the soul. We want to serve our customers from the soul. We want to serve our bosses from the soul. I mean, it's really important to us. It's a matter of personal integrity. Before the age of cell phones, a man who owned a store had a young teenager, come into the store, and they knew each other real well. You know, their families are friends together. So the young fellow goes up to the shopkeeper. He says, can I use the phone in your office real quick? He said, sure, help yourself. So this is what he hears on the telephone. The young guy gets on the phone. He says, hello, I'm trying to mow lawns to earn a little money this summer, and I wonder if you'd like me to come by and estimate your lawn. Then a little pause. And he says, so you're sure you're happy with the guy you already have? Pause. Okay, well, Thank you anyway. So he gets off the phone, and the shopkeeper has been eavesdropping a little bit. He says, I'm sorry you missed the sale. The kid says, oh, actually, that lady was already my customer. I just wanted to make sure she was happy with my work. He wanted to do a good job. He probably shouldn't have deceived her like that. But from the soul, he wanted to please his customer. And see, that's what we're asking for. And once again, doing it heartily. In chapter 12, verse 11 of the book of Romans, do not be slothful, we say. Don't be a slacker. Don't be a slacker. But be fervent in spirit. Fervent is related to the word fever. You know, be hot on this. You know, be passionate about this. And serve the Lord. You're not a slacker. You want to work hard, and you're serving the Lord. So that's how we do life in the marketplace. One more time. We love Joseph. Joseph is such a hero in the Old Testament. You just wonder. You know, you hear about these orphans and children who are in really difficult places, and sometimes they're like, you know, orphan Annie, they just have like a sunshiny disposition. Say, how do they do it? How are they so resilient? How do they rally back? And when you have, you know, that sort of a disposition, life is just so much easier. Joseph had that sunshiny disposition. How did he just keep bouncing back? He's amazing. So in chapter 39 of Genesis, verse 4, he's been sold into slavery to this guy named Potiphar. So Joseph found grace in Potiphar's sight, and he served him, and Potiphar made Joseph overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. So Joseph doesn't want to go to Egypt. He leaves everything familiar, everything he loves. Now, you know, he has every reason to be an angry young kid. And instead, he just has a sunshiny disposition, and he pleases Potiphar somehow. Potiphar says, listen, you're a great young man. You just handle everything. I'm going to go play golf. And that's basically what happened. Well, then, you know, Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. It doesn't work. So Joseph goes to prison. And if Potiphar had believed that Joseph was trying to get together with his wife, Potiphar would have had him killed. Clearly, Potiphar believed Joseph more than his own wife. And so Joseph was not killed, but he did have to go to prison. Once again, what happens when he gets to prison? Amazing. Verse 22. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison did not look after anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with Joseph, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So you get kicked into slavery, and everybody loves him at Potiphar's house. You get kicked into prison, everybody loves him in the prison. How does he do it? He just had this idea that he's going to do a really good job for the people who are counting on him. Amazing. So, doing highly valuable work even when no one is watching. Doing highly valuable work and not just pretending to do highly valuable work. And making every effort from the soul. All right? And then, so why do we do this? You know, why bother? Why knock yourself out, right? And here's the reason. You see in the yellow font, knowing that from the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance. And in the green font there, notice then how your work in the marketplace is one of the major criteria that the Lord uses for your eternal reward. So why do we knock ourselves out? Because this is a major component in how the Lord is going to reward us when we die and stand before Him. Think, really? I mean, what I do for IBM? What I do for the hotel chain? What I do for the government school system or DMV? That's a major component in how the Lord is going to reward me someday? Really? Well, if He's going to reward me based on this, then I better not be a slacker. I better not just be doing good work when people are watching me. It's just groundbreaking. If you ever grasp this, it hits you like a truck. Like, you're kidding. What I do for that man, for my boss, what I do for that customer is actually one of the criteria of my eternal reward. Well, if that's true, I'm going to treat that customer like gold. I'm going to treat that boss like gold, because it must really matter forever. when young R.G. Letourneau finally got a breakthrough. He made heavy equipment, like road graders and bulldozers. He was one of the first in, and he was competing in those days toe-to-toe with Caterpillar. And sometimes he had better machines than Caterpillar, and everybody knew it. During World War II, R.G. Letourneau's bulldozers were so important to the war effort that some of the generals said that the bulldozer was one of the most important weapons of World War II. And that's R.G. Letourneau. Well, in the Depression years, he didn't have a lot of money. He owed $40,000. He owed $20,000. He got a contract with the Texas Highway Department that would give him a $40,000 profit. He had a business partner from church. And the idea was when they got their profits, they would split the profit. So Letourneau would get $20,000. He could pay off his debts. And the other guy would get $20,000. He could do whatever he wanted. But when the work was done, the other fellow from his church insisted that he gets all the money. And Letourneau says, "I wasn't exactly lamb-like in my disposition. I said, that money belongs to my creditors. I have to pay them. Like, you can't have all $40,000. You get half." And the guy insisted. And then Letourneau says, the Lord spoke to his heart. "How much do you love me? How much do you love my people and my church?" And he had seen lawyers. And they said, "There's no way that your partner can win this lawsuit. There's no way. Take him to court and you'll win." But 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says you can't take a brother to court for civil matters. So R.G. Letourneau says, the Lord spoke to his heart. "How much do you love me? How much do you love my people and my church? Are you going to drag the church before a judge, a brother before a judge, because you want $20,000, which was a lot of money in the Depression days? And he says it was one of the hardest things he'd ever done. He went to that man and said, "Brother, we're not going to have a lawsuit over this thing. If you insist on having all the profit, you can have it." Well, the man took it all, went bankrupt shortly afterward. R.G. Letourneau's business grew and grew. He became a very wealthy man. In the marketplace, we just want to be aware that how we treat others is one of the basic criteria for how the Lord is going to reward us for heaven. So that really matters. Having a constant awareness of God. You see in the yellow font there, fearing God. That is what we just talked about, right? The way I treat my customers and my boss is a major criteria for my eternal reward. So I'm afraid of messing that up. I'm fearing God. All right. So fearing God, knowing that from the Lord you shall receive the reward of inheritance. So again, that's eternal reward, inheritance. And you, deep down, first and foremost, you serve the Lord Christ. And no, I thought I served IBM. I thought I served, you know, the car dealership. I thought I served the hotel chain. I thought I served the restaurant. Well, you do. But first and foremost, you're serving Christ. So you have this constant awareness of God. But he who does wrong shall receive back for the wrong which he has done. You have a master in heaven. You see, once you get that, then you can never work the same out in the marketplace. You can never buy and sell the same out in the marketplace. Fearing God, because you're always mindful that he rewards integrity. He sends also unpleasantness to those who do not act with integrity in the marketplace. And he is every worker's ultimate master and promoter. You want to be promoted in this cosmos? The Lord is the first and foremost promoter. In the yellow font again, you have a master in heaven. You serve the Lord Christ. You have to just let that, you know, burn into your soul. And you're not performing for human beings. Ultimately, you're performing for the Lord. Always recalling, too, as you see in the yellow font, that with God there's no respect of person. That is so important. In other words, God is not going to be impressed by your superficial impressions. He's not going to be moved by that. So he doesn't care who your relatives are. Say, "Well, I can get away with being a slacker because my uncle owns the place." The Lord doesn't care about that. The Lord also doesn't care about how pretty or unattractive You are. He doesn't care. You just be a good worker. Say, I can get away with murder because I'm such a Hollywood handsome guy. Well, you better not try to get away with murder because the Lord doesn't care if you're Hollywood handsome. He doesn't care if you're a minority or from a majority ethnicity. You have to do a good job. Say, well, I can do whatever I want because, you know, I'm this. No, you can't. The Lord doesn't care. Your ability or inability to buy nice things. Other people might be impressed that you buy nice things. The Lord is not impressed. He wants you to do a good job, and He is not going to be moved by your bank accounts and your possession. And by your capabilities as compared to someone else. Think, well, I'm actually really smart and really fast, but there's no reason for me to knock myself out because even if I go half throttle, I'm still faster than everybody else. If you have the ability to do more than everybody else, God knows that. And you better not go half throttle. You work hard because the Lord's watching and He knows what your real abilities are. My friend owned his own business. That's pretty successful. I'm not saying, you know, he was rolling in the bucks, but it's pretty successful. And when things got bad, because he had a lot of government contracts, and when things got bad, he wouldn't have work for his guys. But he loved his guys. And he didn't want his guys not to get paid because work dried up. And so he just make up things for them to do. And at least on one occasion that I know of, he sent people over here to help with stuff at the church. And so our friend was paying his people to fix something here at the church. And his own profits then would cover that. He paid for this to get done at the church. I love that. I mean, what a great guy. When the stock market crashed in 1929, famous story of Milton Hershey, who was raised a Mennonite. He wasn't always practicing, but he had a strong work ethic. And Hershey, Pennsylvania, had all of these improvements because Mr. Hershey didn't want people to go without work. He felt really sorry for them. So he just made stuff up at his own expense. He had a lot of money, and so suddenly there's a luxury hotel where there had never been one before, and other things. And the story goes that one time he was looking at the hotel that was being built, and one of his managers said, look at this steam shovel right here. This steam shovel can do the work of 40 men all by itself. And Milton Hershey said, get rid of the steam shovel and hire 40 men. So we have to take care of people. I think you know that the Bible teaches capitalism. But the Bible doesn't teach cold and cruel capitalism. You have to take care of your people. And if you don't love the people who work for you, if you don't nurture them as Christians should, then you are not pleasing the Lord. And so Mr. Hershey knew that. Here's our conclusion then. Marketplace integrity. Here's what we do. We work hard whether anybody's watching us or not. And we work from the soul. We're really trying to do a good job. And if we are men pleasers, but not God pleasers, we'll fix it and have even more integrity because we want to please both God and men. And why would we do a thing like that? Because we honestly believe in our heart of hearts that it's our duty to love everybody. That is, love our customers, love our bosses, love the people that we sell things to, and love the people that we buy things from. And so that's always in our hearts that we're going to do this work from the soul. We're going to do it heartily, and we know that the Lord is going to reward us for that forever someday. So we're not fooling around, and that's marketplace integrity.